I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. I'm Mary Garofalo, and I'll be serving as worship associate today. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for November is nurturing gratitude. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. We light our chalice as a symbol of gratitude. In this sanctuary, we harvest bushels of strength for one another. We cultivate a simple sweetness and brighten our spirits. May we be grateful for the way we nourish and uplift each other, for it is the sharing of this hallowed time together that sustains us. Words of Katie Savani Gelfand.
Bring your seeking with you. You're seeking for answers, for meaning, for forgiveness. You're seeking for wholeness and for peace. Bring your seeking to this space and time, and then set it aside. Your seeking is welcome here. Every part of you is welcome. Yet just for this hour, it is enough that you simply are. Without seeking, be in the silence, in the music, be in the presence of others who have left aside their seeking. Be enough without all that you have not yet found. In the spaciousness you inhabit and encompass here for this time, may you discover something beyond the reach of all seeking. Come, let us worship together.
Morning, everyone. Today, for our Love at the Center moment, I'm going to be sharing an excerpt from an essay by Reverend Dr. Adam Rober Smith. And it is from the book called Love at the Center, which I've shared another essay from previously. So there's a theme. Whenever you see me up here, I'm probably going to be sharing an essay from the book, Love at the Center. Okay, so again, from Reverend Dr. Adam Rober Smith. I wave at my human neighbors when I see them, but internet aside, the community that I am most related to while at home is the non-human natural world. From my study window, I see interconnection after interconnection. Lichens on the trunks of the oaks, deer nibbling on green shoots, mosses taking back the yard from the grass that does not really belong here. The interplay of sun and soil and water shape the presence of the plants and animals that are my nearest neighbors. Every day, this place teaches me about community and connection. On rare and wonderful days, this place shows me something that changes how I understand the world. Like many of us, I find inspiration, comfort, and profound connection in the life that is beyond my own, in the whole of this amazing existence. My Unitarian Universalism is equally informed by two ways of approaching the world. I'm a universalist. I believe in a love so powerful, so complete, that everything and everyone is held in its inclusive embrace. I am also an eco-theologian. I believe that the nature of existence is revealed in our universe and the world of which we are a part. There is a complexity here, though. I fully believe that love is foundational to reality. I also believe that the human understanding of love, the feelings, the longings, the actions that we name all as love, is not something that we can presume the rest of life experiences just as we do. Trained as a scientist and a minister, I am guided by the interconnections of life and meaning, biology and religion, ecology and theology. Ecology, like theology, is a study of interconnectedness. Religion is a practice of interconnectedness, a means through which we humans acknowledge, develop, and value our relatedness with each other and that which is larger than ourselves. I've come to understand through science, experience, and religion that there is nothing which exists alone. All things exist in interdependence, interconnection. Even that which appears to be self-contained, a distant star, for example, is embedded in an entanglement of links and bonds that may not easily be individually known, but exist just the same. Relationship is the basis of being. Many other people have thought about this before me. I have found kin in process and relational theologies, even though their language and mine are not the same. C. Robert Mezel explains Bernard Loomer's idea of relational power. Relational power is the ability to affect and be affected. The relational nature of existence, then, is a reflection of the divine. Mezel writes, God loves perfectly, so God must be the supremely related one who shares fully in the experience of every creature, who is at once fully steadfast and fully responsive. Carter Hayward goes even further. Love is the active realization of relation. God is love, love is God, to God is to love. Love, in relational and process theologies, is not the warm or mushy feelings of pop music and romantic comedies. Love is what allows the world to exist. It is what holds all things together and makes existence coherent. Love is relationship at its best, a way of being that requires relational power. A power that values and respects that which it connects. The kind of love, relational and divine, is also practical and observable in our world. The profound relatedness of fungal mycelium and tree roots, of intestinal flora and animals, provide mutual benefit and thriving for each. The presence of apex predators can improve the landscape by limiting how prey consume plants. Therefore, more plants slow erosion, and therefore more water is retained in the soil. This is nothing if not relational. Ecological balance reveals the value of each interconnected part. the water, the air, the ground, the plants, the animals, the fungus, the microbes. At our best, we participate in these ecologies, there we go, in a balanced way too. We give and receive as needed. My understanding of religious community is centered in a love that must be shared to exist and grow. It's powerful through relatedness and sustains individuals while drawing them into community. I imagine an ecology of love rooted and growing within a diverse ecological system, a diversity of people and ideas that engender life and growth in a myriad of forms. Ecologies tell us that when healthy, a system can act to preserve its own dynamic balance. They tell us that as we are the ecosystem, can identify those things that are damaging and dangerous and either lead them into health or release them to their own fate. Unitarian Universalism, I believe, can bring such community into being. By organizing through covenants, we affirm that relationship is at the core of our faith, that love is at the center. I have found a religious home here because we are people of covenant, of relationship. When we are living our faith, we use relational power to grow in a love that values and respects everything that it connects. Here is another complexity. Love is one of those things that holds so much, and yet we use it as though we all know exactly what we each mean. There are as many ways to think about the concept of love as there are people. Some of us think about it as a virtue or an ethic, others as the nature of the sacred, or as the core of human relationship, and yet others as emotion, practice, or choice. We cannot say that trees or bears or any other species love as we do. We also cannot guarantee that other humans know love exactly as each of us do either. What if what we perceive as love is also nurture and mutuality and sustainability and balance embedded in networks of relationship? We can observe how things live. We can find them in altruism, mutual benefit and thriving, the nurture of the young and the support of mates. We observe in other forms of life things that we humans do too. We call these things love when we do them. Though we do not know how other species understand these behaviors and feelings and motivations, because we observe them in others and ourselves, we can tell that we are not so different from the rest of life. We are not unique in our drive to nurture, to seek mutual benefit, and to thrive. Perhaps this is what the natural world can tell us. Not that other beings feel love as we do, but that we can recognize love as something more than our own feelings. If love is the very best version of relatedness, then love is at the center of life itself and networked throughout our entire existence. Thank you.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning from Christine Walters Paintner. Spirit of generosity, We come to you with hearts overflowing with gratitude for your abundant creation. As we awaken each morning, help us to remember this day is a gift, this breath is grace, this life a wonder. Remind us with every flower we see, every act of kindness, every moment of connection to something so much bigger than ourselves, to whisper thank you. Cultivate in us a sense of awe and trust in your lavish grace. Let each word of thanks we offer expand our hearts until delight inhabits us and we know love as our sustenance. Our first reading this morning from Alan Felsenthal, Open Openly. Bless Tuesday, blessed Monday. Bless the word week, its seven small days trail with why. Bless the men whose words I was too young to hear. A whisper loves a canal. Bless my laugh, lent by grief. I have so little left to borrow. But my hair, it grows. If hair be gold, cut mine so I might rid my beloved of his student loans. Bless thieves, universities, those hands caress what's not theirs. Bless thinking it was yours. Hear our hands, blessed one. Bless them holding the door. Bless each crier on the F train before and after me as they blush, as they transfer into tunnels for the red line. Oh, bless, bless wildly what remains to be done. Bless the one who told me so, the ones who didn't. Even weak breaths bless. Bless weakness, fragile fortress. My friend's body absent of soundness. Bless the sound of someone reliable answering your call, saying, if you're going through hell, hello, hello. Bless being able to respond when a loved one asks, can you tell I'm miserable? I can hear it. Elastic sadness, distinctive as a summons, appear and pronounce. Bless you, my beloved, coming, leaving, staying a while. The tone of being unharmed, deep as a sound sleep. Bless the channel between us. Your tiny boat. Your body in a body of water that connects to a larger body. Bless these sensations. When lost, hear a tender voice. From Naomi Shihab Nye, Gratitude List. Thank you for insulting me. You helped me see how much I was worth. Thank you for overlooking my humanity. In that moment, I gained power. To be forgotten by the wider world and the righteous religious and the weaponized soldiers is not the worst thing. It gives you time to discover yourself. Lemons, mint, almonds roasted and salted, almonds raw, pistachios roasted and salted, cheese. And finally, gratitude from Rosemary Wotola Tromer. Gratitude, it happens, needs less room to grow than one might think, is able to find purchase on even the slenderest of ledges, is able to seed itself in even the poorest of soils. Just today, I marveled as a small gratitude took root in the desert of me, like a juniper tree growing out of red rock. If I hadn't felt it myself, I might not have believed it, but it's true. One small thankfulness can slip into an arid despair, and with it comes a change in the inner landscape, the scent of evergreen. Here end the readings. Feeling depressed? Make a gratitude list. Resentful? Get to a gratitude meeting. All you need is an attitude of gratitude. It can border on the trite, saccharine, the listing of small blessings for which one might be grateful. The rain didn't become torrential until after I got home. That driver let me merge into the exit lane. I caught a whiff of azalea. My favorite pair of jeans are clean. My brand of peanut butter is on sale. I heard the grumpy crossing guard laughing with a passing child this afternoon. I'm often the one preaching the wisdom and benefits of noticing and recognizing and celebrating these tiny, ordinary moments of blessing. I'm usually the one touting the physical and mental health benefits of a gratitude practice. Reduced anxiety and depression, supporting health, heart health, lessening stress, boosting humanity, and improving sleep. I say sometimes that a further reason for the observance of Thanksgiving beyond the traditional is to give us a sort of gratitude booster to keep us well conditioned for the spiritual practice of gratitude throughout the year. And I believe all that, mostly. There have been periods in my life when I've followed my own advice and that of my wisest teachers and kept a daily gratitude journal for months on end. And there have been times I've let that practice lapse, but always, always table grace said in my home or wherever I might be invited to say grace. After offering thanks for the food about to be received, the grace offers space for me and anyone else gathered around the table to add thanks for whatever additional blessings might be topmost in our minds or on our hearts, before concluding with thanks for all our many other blessings. The tough tendrils of this practice of gratitude instilled by my parents run too deep and spread too wide through my soul to be neglected or extinguished completely. Still, there are times, like 2025, when the opening lines of Edna St. Vincent Millay's poem, Thanksgiving 1950, seem to speak the only truth of the moment. Hard, hard it is this anxious autumn to lift the heavy mind from its dark forebodings, to sit at the bright feast and with ruddy cheer give thanks for the harvest of a troubled year. Is it right to feast in a time so solemn? Should we not rather fast and give the day to prayer? What good do discount peanut butter, clean jeans, a momentarily less than grumpy crossing guard, the scent of flowers that after all bloom and smell lovely every year, or rain that is only heavy, not torrential? What good do these minutiae do anyone when stacked up against the echoes of the KKK, an open embrace of Nazism, and widespread greed and deliberate cruelty and extrajudicial killings carried out by government actors on the orders of a dangerous president, and attempts at eradicating the lives and histories of entire races, classes, and genders of people. All this and more in our country alone, the same or similar in other countries around the world. Of what practical or correctional purpose is it to be grateful for small blessings in such a world? My grandparents' best friends when I was growing up were a couple named Harold and Irene Kath. Harold and Irene owned a flower shop in a small western Minnesota town just a few blocks from Grandpa and Grandma's house. Come June or so, upon our arrival for a visit, we'd race down the hill with great expectation. And there they'd be, a vast profusion of purple petunia amid lush green leaves growing out of a crack in the sidewalk just to the side of the shop's front door. The delight of those volunteer petunias appearing year after year would definitely have made my gratitude list if I'd been keeping one at that age. And at this age, even feeling a bit over the whole gratitude list thing, I wouldn't quarrel with the claim that that annual reappearance of those unplanted flowers was worthy of my gratitude. That said, I'm thinking of those petunias a bit differently this year, through the lens of Rosemary Wotola Tromer's poem about small gratitudes taking root in tiny, inhospitable places. Rather than casting the flowers themselves as a source of gratitude, I'm viewing them as a symbol of what gratitude can accomplish when it finds its way into the poor soil and arid ground of souls, our souls. Perhaps the point this hard, hard, anxious autumn isn't to see if we can force ourselves to be grateful for 25 or 10 or even just 2 blessings every single day, even as the world seems to be ending or at least hell-bent on destroying our loved ones. Perhaps the point isn't even to be able to gaze upon those 2 or 10 or 25 things and see them as proof that all isn't lost if such blessings still exist in the world. Perhaps the point is what is transformed within us when we allow gratitude for even just a single blessing to take root in the rocky soil of our broken, weary lives. What if, in fact, the mechanism by which gratitude reduces anxiety and depression, supports heart health, lessens stress, boosts immunity, and improves sleep is by filling the cracked, parched places in our souls with new life, with metaphorical volunteer petunias? And what if it doesn't stop there? A window box or a planter filled by human hands with flowers brightens a storefront, adds color to a retail street, and lifts the spirits of passersby. Petunias forcing their way up from under concrete through irregular sidewalk cracks in search of sun and air brings a dimension of untamed vitality, of unforced and boundless possibility. What wild, unimagined beauty and vibrant life might spring from these spirits of ours that have been worn out, malnourished, trampled down, and depleted by a pandemic bookended by 2 Trump administrations? What might emerge from our spirits if but a single seed of gratitude were to take root in us and be allowed to find its way to blossom despite the rocky soil? Would it be openness to new friendships or deeper relationships? Motivation to enter recovery? Works of music or art to delight creator and audience alike? Bold partnerships across lines of race, class, gender, and party? a desire to volunteer, a sense of generative playfulness, fresh energy, and renewed purpose for tackling the work of healing the world. Gratitude for small blessings itself isn't a corrective and doesn't stop the harm caused by systems and individuals, corporations and administrations destroying our planet, starving children and families and adults, abandoning whole segments of society, closing doors of opportunity, and disregarding our Constitution. Rather, gratitude for small blessings and big ones, through the new life it plants in us, revives and strengthens us to stop the harm, taking up the work with renewed vigor and fresh perspective. The task before us is immense and complex and will be the work of decades. We need, therefore, to follow all the pathways and practices that might sustain us along the way, even the practice of gratitude. I'm not suggesting that gratitude for gratitude's sake is meaningless, or that a gratitude practice, whatever form it might take, is without merit. But if, like me, you're finding gratitude heavy lifting this autumn, then perhaps embracing it as simply one more tool to apply to the task that's uppermost in our minds, doing something about what's happening, perhaps thinking of it as simply one more tool might help you find your way back to noticing and offering thanks for life's many blessings. And blossoming life might follow. May it be so. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.